The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Lou Alexander, Chief Economist and Managing Director at Nomura Holdings, joining us on the RingCentral phone line. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning.
So, a nice present for Janet Yellen yesterday. First day as Fed Chair, markets just fall apart. Now, of course, we cannot always put, you know, correlation or cause with this event. But is the stock market now and the emerging market turmoil more of a challenge, more on a front burner for the Fed?
It has to be. I think the financial conditions are very important for the outlook, and so they have to be paying attention to this. I think, moreover, the decline in the ISM survey yesterday, which kind of got things going, was unexpected. Having said that, I would still argue that financial conditions in some broad sense are supportive for growth, and there are good reasons to expect a kind of near-term slowdown in growth just from inventories and weather, and neither of those things have really long-lasting effects on the outlook. And so it's certainly a cause for concern, certainly something they're going to watch, but I'm not sure it's enough to alter their course.
What about the risks of disinflation?
So, I think those risks can easily be overdone. I think I want to stress that in the short run, I think I do see more downside risk to inflation than upside risk, but this is largely coming from commodity prices. I think when you look beyond the next 6 months and you look beyond commodity prices, if anything, I think the pressures are likely to slowly build. The labor market is tightening in ways that are material for that. And while wages have not been going up sharply, I do think over time they are likely to move higher. And so I think over a medium-term horizon, I think it's more likely the prices are going to move up than down.
You say that you see signs of it in the labor market. Where are you seeing it, though? Because, like you said, we're not seeing it in wages yet.
Well, for example, if you actually look at, say, for example, the wage component of the Employment Cost Index, which is our best measure we have, you actually have seen some upward drift in the pace of wage increases, particularly in goods-producing industries. Service-producing industries, it's been more flat, but it's certainly not declining. And in an environment where unemployment, and particularly short-term unemployment, continues to fall towards levels that are sort of more consistent with full employment, I think you should expect those pressures to build.
We're looking at the bond market. The bond market has been so sanguine, Lou, if you want to take it as any kind of indicator of a broad consensus on what's going on in the economy and the Fed. On the one hand, you could say it's been kind of hard to read. The Fed starts tapering and bonds rally. On the other hand, in the bond market, many people have said that after the weak jobs report is when the rally really gained momentum. You know, the 10-year getting down as low as 2.6% yesterday. Inflation, though, not rearing its head. Does this move make sense to you?
Look, I think in a context where there are near-term uncertainties about the course of the economy, I do think this kind of move down is consistent with that. Ultimately, I think the thing that's going to drive bond yields higher will be greater confidence in the outlook of the economy and, frankly, the ability of the economy to handle higher rates. I think that is something that will come over the next 6 months, but I don't think it's necessarily going to come over the next two or three. So I think there is some uncertainty about how the economy is going to go. My forecast is we've got a soft patch here related to inventories and weather, but that by the time we get to the end of Q1, we'll be kind of moving towards a higher plane. And I think that'll be the point when the bond market will face sort of greater challenges. But I think after the big adjustment we saw last year in kind of May and June, I don't think this needs to be a precipitous move. I don't think rates have to be a lot higher given the outlook for growth.
Are you surprised by how much they moved down? Was it all emerging market turmoil generated?
I think there was a degree of sort of safe haven flows back into treasuries that was a little bit surprising in the sense that, frankly, I look at what's going on in the emerging world, and this feels more like a cyclical macroeconomic story rather than a crisis story. These countries, for the most part, have flexible exchange rates. They have large volumes of reserves. You're seeing markets react to, you know, shocks both sort of on the economic side and the policy side that are sort of normal in some sense, and I don't think this is a crisis environment. So I was a little surprised that you saw these kind of flight to quality, if you like, flows back into treasuries. But beyond that, I wouldn't say it was terribly surprising.
Well, and of course, let's remind our listeners that among your many roles you did when you were at the Board of Governors, you specialized to a certain extent in international economies and the international part of the equation for the Fed. Seems like perhaps what's going on is just to a large degree in people's gut, it's psychological. The first thing they think of is 97, 98, when a little country, well, not so little, Thailand, but nevertheless, financially, not that big of a player, devalues its currency, and boom, the next thing you know, you've got a full-blown crisis.
Circumstances were very different then. I think to a certain extent, the nervousness around emerging markets reflects the fact that they've had a very good, you know, 10 years or so up until sort of where we were last year. And during that period, markets had gotten pretty stretched in a number of places, as well as the fact that in recent years in a number of places you'd have a real deterioration in policymaking. And so to a certain extent, some sort of correction was warranted. I do think it is important to remember all of the ways in which things are different from where they were in the late 90s. In 97, most of these countries had fixed exchange rates, and they also had extremely low levels of reserves. So, and an awful lot of what happened in 97 was balance of payments pressure pushed them countries to the limits. They had to move their exchange rates. They had financial systems that were very vulnerable, in part because the exchange rates had been fixed. Those problems really don't exist in anywhere near the same degree in these countries. Now, they are facing growth challenges, and that means their currencies probably should be weaker, and there is a degree to which the Fed adjusting its policy means a somewhat different risk environment for investors globally, and that means pulling chips off the table in a variety of places, including emerging markets. And so I don't find any of those adjustments terribly surprising. This does not feel like a crisis of the magnitude of 97, 98, or frankly, most other things that I would call an emerging
market. So then it doesn't pose a threat to the economy. When you look at the domestic economy, let's talk a bit about what you see. Is it possible that in a couple of employment reports from now, people look back and say, yeah, gosh, it really was that severe winter weather? Or is it your bet that people are going to say, whoa, I shouldn't have put so much stock in that winter weather argument? For some reason, as we went from, you know, December into January and February, the economy started losing steam.
I still think it's not just weather again. I would stress the fact that basically inventory accumulation in the second half of last year was unsustainable, and there's going to have to be a ratcheting down in growth for a while just associated with moving the inventory picture back to a more sustainable basis. That, in addition to weather, I think, are the two things that are the obvious kind of near-term drags. I still think that the likely outcome is we'll look back in several months and say, yes, this is a temporary pause in growth. This is not a permanent ratcheting down to some lower number. But to be perfectly frank, it's going to take several months of data to really sort that out.
Why do you think there was such inventory accumulation? Do you think the optimism had got too much, or do you think that people just didn't spend the way companies thought they were going to?
I don't think the inventory build was unanticipated in the sense of people just going, gee, I think demand's going to be really high. I'm going to produce a lot, and the demand didn't come through, and therefore I'm stuck with all these inventories. There are certain pieces of the story that fit that. Say, for example, if you just look at autos in the month of January, I suspect it's going to be that because the weather really did affect sales in January. But over the entire second half of last month, I think partly what had happened was inventories had gotten very low. Businesses did get more optimistic, and they thought if they were going to have to produce that they needed to have more stock on hand. And I think most of what you saw in the second half of last year was a more optimistic outlook. Now, I think inevitably, you know, when you kind of move from a low level to a normal level, that is a boost in growth while you're doing that adjustment. But once you reach the normal level, you can't keep growing like that, and that ends up there's some payback in growth when you stop growing, mm-hmm. when inventories stop growing, and that's, I think, what is likely to happen.
What's your forecast for payrolls this Friday? Big, big report for these markets.
We're at 175. I think we're a little weaker than the consensus. Okay. I think there's a lot of uncertainty around this number, in part because of weather. And
And there's still plenty of bad weather, that's for sure. What about the Fed? Janet Yellen testifies. We're going to have another Fed meeting. Does the Fed stay on the taper track, number one? Do they really keep the key rate at zero to mid-2015?
So my formal forecasts on both those points are yes and yes, but let me nuance that a little bit. I think in terms of what Yellen is going to say next week, I think with inflation very low and with the softer tone in data recently, I think Yellen's going to remind us, number one, that the path of tapering is data dependent. That's a theme that Bernanke has given, and I suspect she will reiterate it. Moreover, I think she will say with inflation very low, there's no reason for them to raise rates quickly, and therefore reinforcing the notion that they're not close in any sense to hiking rates. So I think that part of the message will be dovish in some sense, but I think there's a broader context in which there are bigger issues she's also got to address, like really how big is the output gap with the unemployment rate having come down. I think that is an issue on which you're not going to get quite as dovish a message. I think the evidence is growing that it's narrower measures of labor slack rather than broader measures of slack that are relevant for that question. And so I think there's going to be if you look at the sort of the longer term aspects of the outlook, that isn't going to be entirely dovish.
All righty. Well, prep for so much now. The payrolls report, what happens next in emerging markets. Janet Yellen testimony next week. Thanks to Lou Alexander of Nomura.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.